Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the June 14 edition of Commodity Week. United States Department of Agriculture has released its monthly WASDE reports. The soybean numbers really didn't change. Corn has. We'll discuss it and the condition of the current crop today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today for Commodity Week include Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Ellen Dearden of Ag Review from Morton, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. Our guest today, Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions from Omaha, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's start our discussion with this question. The USDA, of course, released its World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates this week from the World Agricultural Outlook Board. Those numbers did change just a bit what the average national yield for the corn crop might be, yet it still showed a 14 million bushel crop. Many, of course, discounted that quickly and realized that USDA can't do anything with that number really until the acreage figures are released at the end of the month. What kind of size of crop do you think is actually there? We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
That's a pretty tough question this time of year, but obviously from the acreage standpoint, my opinion would be that we need to slash a fair amount of acres, and I'm looking at like a 3.5 million acres standpoint. And as far as yield goes, obviously you get off to a little bit of a slow start, in some areas a really slow start, and then obviously some real issues with weather, wetness, ponds out in the field. My harvested acre number is probably going to be a little less percentage than what they're looking at, and yield wise I'm looking at probably low 150, so I'm probably struggling to get much over 13 right now where they're at 14.
Ellen?
I would certainly think that we've lost at least 3 million corn acres so far, and my guess is that this is about the end of the corn acres having gone in the Midwest. I'm down around a 13-2 crop at this stage of the game.
And Jackie Vakes.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree that we're going to lose 3 million acres. I think it's possible, especially when you look at southeastern Minnesota all the way down, the Austin area all the way down to Des Moines, has very little planting of any kind done, whether it be corn or beans. And so to me, the bigger question, Todd, is what kind of carryout will we have? Even if we get down to, let's say we go down to a 13-2 crop, we take 800 million bushels off, you're still looking at above a billion bushel carryout. And so I think the ultimate or the bottom line is just what's going to happen to demand, because they built so much demand back in to keep us even at the 2 billion bushel level. And so how important is the number of acres that we lose really in the bigger scheme of things?
So Jackie tells us that it's about the consumption over the coming year. Do you think those numbers are padded too much?
Yeah, I mean, to go out with 1,300 on the exports to me was probably a bit of an eyebrow raiser. But, on the other hand, we got to remember that this year we were greatly kind of affected by the quality of the crop, and obviously a shortness of crop. And so it's really going to be tough to kind of see where we come out on this export number. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, where numbers are from Argentina, especially. You know, they're talking about exporting a fair amount of corn here in the short term. And so, you know, if they end up importing a fair amount of corn into us, to me, there's just a lot of back and forth that can happen. And I guess I would agree with Jackie on the one hand that maybe those numbers are padded just a little bit. But on the other hand, if we do have a decent-sized crop of good quality, I think it changes things a great deal.
At least $300 million too high on that export number, and it seems to me that other suppliers, world suppliers of corn, are not going to give up those positions that they've gained very easily.
I have some interesting questions, I hope, for you related to wheat and to corn. I want to go through some numbers. July wheat this week settled down 15.5. That was at 680.75. That's the change on the week, of course. Corn futures, a 664.5 top in the July. The bottom there at 640.25 settled 11.25 lower at 655 in December. At $5.33, was down 25.5. It filled a gap, by the way, down on the bottom side. So the question here is this. July wheat, the harvest month, at 680.75, is well below the crop insurance price, $8.57. December corn at 533 this week is, well, below the 565, right? So the question is there anything to learn from the wheat, which is very close to harvest at this point, that producers of corn should consider over this last 6 to 7 months? Because we're looking at a price in wheat now that is, well, close to a couple bucks below where it was.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about that corn price come this fall is going to be, a cash corn price is probably going to be, have a 4 in front of it rather than a 5. So we could well be a dollar under the spring crop insurance price as we go there. I'm not sure what we can learn from this $1.80 spread right now in the July wheat versus the crop insurance price.
Well, yeah, I was headed towards a kind of the spread is pretty wide there. It was much, you put a lot of wheat in the ground because of the crop insurance. Probably put a lot of corn in the ground because of the crop insurance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the game plan all along. And to be honest, you know, I guess I had several customers that actually were throwing the bearish word at me, which, you know, is a little bit odd for me. I've been awfully cautious this year thus far. I think given the spring that we had, I mean, it was exactly the wrong scenario. So to me, yeah, the general consensus would be that, yeah, we're going to go ahead and try to plant a lot of corn acres with a good insurance price again. But, you know, we just didn't have the type of spring that we need. And there's certain areas that they're really going to push corn acres that it just flat out didn't happen.
Jackie, can I move this just a little bit? Does it make much difference whether it's the September bids, the October bids, or the December when you look at the cash on this in terms of the spread? So on the basis side?
Well, when you're asking me, does it make much difference? You're talking about the basis side is what you're talking about? Am I understanding you right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, of course it does. I mean, when you look at the September corn, you know, the reality is we are still very, very tight when it comes to old stock corn. Now, USDA did raise the import number by 25 million bushels, which is a record of 150 million bushels coming into the United States from somewhere else on this last report. So that maybe dampens my my outlook or my spirits when it comes to how high the September contract will go. But you're going to see very aggressive basis bids, and we hear it already in the countryside. In fact, what we're hearing even now is we're starting to hear some better bids coming in other parts of the country on new crop corn. And I think it's a circumstance where everybody is trying to, like Matt said, we've been very cautious. I've been very cautious, too. And we've been trying to make sure that we can get our way through. And so when you look, anytime you look at September, October, November bids, September bids at the beginning of the month are probably going to be better than they will be by the end of the month because traditionally we are harvesting down in the south. This is going to be a wild card this year. We're going to have some harvesting in some places in the U.S. And in other places, we may not harvest as early as we normally do, and meaning the South. I talked to some of the people in Mississippi. They had difficulties, too. And so the big crunch is going to come. Where is the corn for, let's say, the end of July and the month of August and the beginning of September going to come from? We can't necessarily bring it in from outside the U.S. very easily when it comes to Brazil. So Argentina becomes the key, and, of course, the farmers in Argentina are not very happy. So to answer your question, I think it's typical that the basis is better in the September contract, but gets worse as we get into harvest. This year could be totally different. You know, I think all of us will agree this crop gets made now in June, July, and August. We're behind on heat units. And if we, for some reason, shut this rain off, we're in a world of hurt. So I don't think there's anything written in stone yet as to where we're going to end up on the December contract at this point in time.
Right. I guess maybe what I'm thinking of in this process is we've talked about the gap area, or what I've called the gap, that August-September time frame when we're probably not going to have corn. We won't have corn here. We won't have as much corn from the South because they're 3 weeks behind, likely, unless they get a lot of heat units to push that crop really fast along. And then that there's really a difference between how maybe bullish or friendly a producer might want to get when they look at the marketplace. And I just don't know, based on that gap area, as to what the rest of the marketing year might look like. And I don't want to get too bearish either, but the crop's just not made is what it amounts to.
You know, to me, whenever you look at this situation as far as this gap that you're talking about, obviously we can import some corn into areas of the U.S. From Argentina, but it's not feasible in all areas of the U.S. For everyone. And so to me, there's going to be a pretty interesting situation in that we've been pulling old crop corn, new crop corn back into the old crop for a couple, 3 years now pretty heavily. Last year was a huge amount. We're not going to see that this year. You know, you look from a good part of the Midwest, you know, didn't get much planting done until the middle of May. And so where's the early corn going to come from? It's not going to be there this year. And so it's going to be really interesting on a basis level. I think you're going to see some red hot basis levels, but it'll be, like Jackie said, first half, second half. And by golly, if you can't get it delivered first half and you committed to it, you're going to take a huge penalty for it. And so a guy's going to have to be pretty cautious about getting too aggressive on some of these new crop bids and not overextend himself, because he could really get in a world hurt.
That means the last stocks number for the year might be pretty solid, right?
I think this does say that USDA stocks reports, which has been very questionable when we get to that September report, that we'll finally see some things cleared up that have been hanging out there for several years and not with very good answers. I think it's interesting, too, from a basis standpoint, that you're seeing a lot of these new crop bids, even OCHNOV-DEES, improve or better than normal. I think that's very indicative that end users are not well covered. The percentage they have bought is much, much less than in previous years.
And I would agree with you, Ellen. And I think the other thing, you know, you brought up the USDA report. You know, traditionally, they tell us that that usually 500 million bushels of corn is harvested before, the September 1st, the September 1st cutoff date. Last year we had 1.2 billion, right? You know, where are we going to be this year? You know, if you look at a swing between 1.2 billion and let's just say we're
zero,
hopeful that we would maybe get the normal 500 million, this could be quite a wild time.
It sounds like it'll be good. Will soybeans be just as wild, do you think, Jackie?
Well, I think soybeans could be a whole lot different than what people are thinking they're going to be. I believe that, you know, and now when you start talking about soybeans, now let's throw a prevented plant into the mix. And we do know that there is a pretty good percentage of prevented plant in some areas. You know, all along, all the trade has continued to say all the time is the minute that we stop planting corn, we're going to switch to beans. Well, you know, this weather hasn't exactly been blessing the bean planter either. And so I think the realization will sometime in the future hit at the Chicago board, And they will they'll begin to understand that just because it stopped raining today doesn't necessarily mean a farmer can get back out there and plant right away. And, you know, we're not that far away. Today's the 14th, right? The 25th of June is the cutoff date for insurance in many parts of the U.S. Next 11 days, we've got a lot to do.
My opinion on beans is that there's been a lot of them planted in the last week or so, and I do think that this is a fairly heavily anticipated number coming up on Monday as far as what the progress is. And I do think that the acreage number on beans has, in my opinion, it doesn't have any room to go lower anyway. I think that it's going to grow, in my opinion. But as from a production standpoint, you know, there's just a lot of areas that didn't get beans planted in an optimal time frame. And so, you know, I don't know that obviously the bean crop's made in August, but I don't know that I'm going to sit here and say that I think the bean crop's going to be enormous just yet.
I did not like that November beans closed for the week under $13, but I think that we still have a lot of bounce left.
And that wraps up this first half of the program. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with Bill Lapp. He's at Advanced Economic Solutions out in Omaha, Nebraska. By the way, November beans settled at $12.98 and a quarter. They were down 32 cents on the week.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. Severe weather struck northern Illinois on Wednesday. There were initial reports of 7 tornadoes. Most of these were small, but an EF2 tornado near Savannah caused at least one serious injury. Hail and widespread wind damage was reported as well. Rainfall amounts of 2 to 4 inches were reported in parts of northeastern Illinois. Many places in Illinois saw their first 90-degree weather on Wednesday as well. Otherwise, this week was relatively quiet with little rainfall across the state and temperatures close to average. Despite the drier week, flooding concerns remain on parts of the Illinois and Mississippi rivers. According to the National Weather Service, highs on Saturday are expected to range from 79 in far northern Illinois to 87 in southern Illinois. Lows for Saturday night are expected to be in the upper 60s. Highs on Sunday will be in the mid-80s. Lows for Sunday night will be in the mid to upper 60s. Highs on Monday are expected to be in the low 80s, with lows in the low to mid 60s. It's the same story for Tuesday and Wednesday, with highs in the low to mid 80s and lows in the low to mid 60s. There is a 30 to 60% chance of rain on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. The potential for rainfall is between 1 to 2 inches. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the June 14 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, and Matt Bennett of TGM of Windsor, Illinois. Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions in Omaha, Nebraska is our guest this week. Bill, thank you so much for taking the time and spending it with us. Can you remind our listeners just exactly who you are and what it is that you do first, please?
Sure. I'm Bill Lapp, and I have a company in Omaha called Advanced Economic Solutions, and we specialize in assisting food companies, restaurants, and food manufacturers in their procurement, broad range of commodities that they would have to buy in order to produce the food that consumers want. I work a little bit with livestock producers, a couple financial firms, and some of the interest in the biofuel sector as well. And we've been out here in Omaha since our inception in 2005, and we're finally enjoying a little bit drier weather.
So you'd be purchasing bean meal, bean oil, eggs, chicken, meat of all sorts, I suppose.
Sure. I advise on the procurement of all that, so I act as their market analyst and let them do the actual procurement of those items.
For this year, what have you been telling them about up
front-loading of their purchases. Anything?
Sure. Thing that strikes me is when you're fortunate enough, when you work with a restaurant, you can act holistic and look at their whole picture and try to, if you're generally bearish or bullish on a market, you can pick those and make sure they have some coverage going into the growing season. So for this year, a couple things have come to mind. Is one is that if they have any needs, especially on cost plus contracts for corn or soybean meal, they should be covered on the old crop, and they should, on these dips below $5.25, you know, I've had them covering some of their corn needs as well. And I try, just as an aside, to avoid having them make buying decisions between Memorial Day and Labor Day. It just tends to be a bad time to have to pull the trigger when the emotions are the highest. I do think, and I think Jackie mentioned it, that, you know, there's some risk to the downside to this market, sub $5 type numbers, and I'm really thinking that from their perspective they want to be competitive with the other restaurants. So we try to make sure that they are a little bit disciplined. The key items that I would be most friendly or bullish on would be soybean oil and beef, and both of those I think are going to be in tight supply through 2014. And the ones I would want to be most patient with would be corn, soybean meal, and wheat.
Given your recommendations then, since we've been talking about corn so heavily today, what kind of leads you to the conclusions that you have, and kind of how are you looking at this crop this year? I mean, obviously it's a stark contrast from last year, but what kind of situation do you feel this corn crop is in, and how do you look for the market to behave moving forward?
Well, Matt, you picked a great time to ask me this, because last year on June 15th, we went home on this exact same day thinking that everything was in good order and there was no reason to be concerned, and we were going to play out a fairly benign weather season. And I think we came in on Monday, June 18th of 2012, and never looked back to the prices, and yields declined for the next 60 days. So I first of all, go into this with a great deal of humility, as we all do after, I think, last year. I think that on these breaks down to $5.25, I think you need to be covered through the end of the year. The thing that strikes me most is a couple things. One is the kind of yield decline we had last year is about a 1 in 20 event in terms of the percent decline. So for us to have that type of adverse weather would be possible, but a rare event, and I view 1 year versus the previous year as like rolling dice. The last one doesn't tell you much about what the next one's going to be. The one thing I do see, and it was mentioned, was that we're going to have to work to get our export markets to return. For the first time since USDA started tracking U.S. corn exports in 1960, we will not be the number one corn exporter in the world. Between 1960 and 2010, we had between 45% and 70% of world coarse grain trade share. This year, we're down to 17%, and we'll be the number three in terms of market share. And we will not earn that back very quickly. Our share of exports to Japan used to run 90% plus or minus of their market was coming to the U.S. for supply, and this year it fell below 50%. So there are some things that I think producers and end users need to be cognizant of and cautious about.
Can we talk a little bit on the bean oil side of things? And that is, you said you're friendly on the bean oil. Does that translate back to the beans themselves, or is meal going to be a drag on the complex?
I think that for the past couple of years, they've been trading more independent of one another. So what happens in oil may drive crush and may get you lower meal values. But I think that there's been quite a bit of independence, and my bias for that is based on the outlook for demand for ending stocks outlook, as well as demand from the biodiesel front.
Bill, when you made the remark that we're going to be tight on cattle and tight on meat, and I don't disagree with that at all. Now, when you looked at the USDA report that came out, they dropped feed usage for corn from 925 million bushels down to 800 million. In your opinion, can you justify 800 million bushels of feed usage when you're sitting right out in cattle country and you're dealing with that industry all the time? Can you give us maybe a little bit of your insight on that?
Sure. I will self-proclaim to be one of the most cynical viewers of the USDA's corn feed and residual number, and I do, in my heart, believe a large degree of the variation from year to year in that number is in the residual, and statistics just don't apply to that number. I've tried to correlate these feed numbers with changes in animal units or meat production or potential demand, and they just don't correlate well. What it does correlate well with is large beginning supplies mean larger feed use. So in my mind, you can get to a 5.3 billion type of number without a lot of cattle and feedlots and any expansion in hogs of any significance, and limited on the poultry side.
Bill, just because you're in Omaha doesn't mean you get outside and take a look, but have you been out in the field to check and see what the crop looks like for corn in your part of the world yet?
Yes, and locally it's gone where it's planted from being fairly yellow to starting to green up after a couple of days. I attended a meeting in Ames, Iowa last week, so I had the privilege of driving back and forth. And there's a lot of corners of the field that either will be replanted or will have some loss if they even get a crop. I think that I don't have a good way to assess how many acres will be lost. 3 million is possible. It's happened a couple times in the last 20, 30 years, and this has certainly been a year that is possible. The fields that there are areas that are looking really good now because of the additional rainfall we've had. But I think you have to consider it a risk that we'll have less acreage on June 28th if USDA can come close to the right number, because it's not all planted as of that date, as of June 1, and the percent harvested is somewhat of a question any year, and we obviously know what yields can do. If you look at early dryness or planting date, they have some impact, but the real key, and I think we've learned that time and time again, is what happens from toward the end of June through July and into August with our temperature and precipitation.
Bill, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Glad to do so. Thank you for inviting me on.
You're welcome. Bill Lapp is with Advanced Economic Solutions. He is in Omaha, Nebraska. Now time for a final word from our panelist. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I'd just like to say everyone should be watching markets fairly closely and make sure that profitability is the name of the game here.
Matt Bennett is with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois.
Looks to me like there's some $13 cash bids for fall on beans, and for both this fall and for next fall.
And Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County.
Well, and like always, use the tools of marketing. It can help you to be able to wait out and find out what the weather's all about, and perhaps even get a little sleep at night.
Thank you so much to our panelists and to our guests. That wraps up this June 14 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.